This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. You're listening to Issues and Ideas, the show where local voices tell the stories that keep the Central Coast connected. I'm David Maccabee. On this week's show, I sit down with Carlos and Kyle Plummer of the Slow Film Society. With the Film Expo coming up in November and a fundraising night at the Bay Theater, they've got a lot happening both on screen and behind the scenes. Then Dr. Consuelo Mukes is back with the nonprofit story. This week, it's all things library as she talks with Julian McAdam, president of the Slow Library Foundation, and the county library director, Christopher Barnacle. And we'll close with Michelle Haddad from the Literacy Connection, who's helping students and tutors build stronger futures one page at a time. It's film, community libraries, and the power of teaching people to read this week on Issues and Ideas.
Hi, my name is Kyle Plummer. I'm a local filmmaker here on the Central Coast, and I'm on the board of the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival, as well as the Central Coast Film Society.
Hi, my name is Carlos Plummer. I am also a local filmmaker, and I am the executive director of the Central Coast Film Society.
You guys, where did this love of filmmaking come from?
So I think growing up in a household where, you know, our parents were both involved somewhat in both the industry side as well as just being film lovers, we were really exposed to film at a really young age, and it really pushed us to not only just be fans, but to then want to make stuff of our own. And as we started to produce more on the Central Coast, like doing short films all throughout high school, we started to, you know, go through those early stages of not only figuring out how to make film, but also the challenges of what it's like to make film here in the Central Coast. And there were certain hurdles we ran into that we figured, oh, I would love to try to solve this issue. And after going to school in Southern Utah at Utah Tech University, both Carlos and I spent 4 years there each, and brought a wealth of knowledge back home after graduating and getting a lot of hands-on experience on sets with cameras. And bringing that back, we started to discover that there were a lot of like-minded people here on the Central Coast that also wanted to do not only the work, but also, you know, celebrate the film culture that exists here. So it's kind of put us in a unique position where we've been at the center of a lot of that.
When we got into high school, we started understanding that it was really turning into something that we wanted to take seriously. And so everything we're doing now, I think, is kind of reflective of that, being that we're, you know, turning our the fun side of it and the creative element and trying to make it like a viable, you know, resource for us.
Why don't you go into that a little more? How is it becoming a viable resource?
Well, I think the biggest thing for us, and this is kind of where the mission of Central Coast Film Society is truly reflective, what we're really seeing is that not only is there a viable source of, you know, other like-minded creatives and people in the area that really want to take this seriously, and the passion is, you know, so transparent. I think one of the things that we are really feeling is that we are able to kind of pool the resources together and not only craft some pretty, you know, kick butt films, but really put things together in a sense of longevity. Like, we're able to see, you know, within the next couple years, 5 years, that these people are going to be making bigger and better things. And we really want to be a part of that. And we want to put our heads together. And so I think that's kind of where the viable nature comes into it, to kind of see that what we've been doing since a young age is kind of turning into something a little more serious.
No, I couldn't agree more. Growing up on the Central Coast, we were kids. I'm a bit older than you guys. So we were the generation of, who has a camcorder? Who can we borrow the stuff from? Okay, now we got to buy tapes, and we got to buy extra batteries, and now we got to get a pool of people together and like bribe them with pizza or beer or whatever to come be in our horror movie. And then when I came back, my family and I moved back in January, and seeing the film culture here, I was like, oh, this is something totally different. There's a real culture here. There's people actually making things, and not just on an old camera or on their phone. They're really making quality film.
Yeah, and I think one thing that really excited us when, for example, there's the Micro Horrors Festival that goes on in San Luis Obispo, and the people who put that on, we know they're heavily involved in a lot of the film culture around here too. And I think that was like a tipping point for a lot of people here where we started to realize, oh, I actually want to work with these people. I actually want to, oh, there are all these exciting voices and exciting ideas. And as we started to meet more people through Slow Film Fest at the Central Coast Film, showcase they do every year, we started to see new faces that we were like, oh, I really want to collaborate with them on something. And then, you start to find excuses of like, oh, I have this like idea for a commercial. Why don't we use it as an excuse to work together? And then that becomes like the first step of a working relationship that then the next thing 2, 3 years down the line, I'm starting to see all these names pop up on each other's projects in completely different capacities, and everybody's sort of helping each other out, which has been really cool to see. Like this summer alone, there were like 3 or 4 different projects, short films that, it was the same group of people roughly on all of them, but they were all completely different filmmakers, all completely different stories, different genres, a lot of stuff going on. As well as there's been a really exciting burst in the education sphere as well.
I think that's really important, and a really important thing to highlight there is a film family. When I was down south, that was the most important thing to me at that time, was having my film family. And it sounds like what you guys are building or have built here is a community of people who are all willing to work on each other's things and learn in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of the biggest goal for us going forward is to boost the knowledge about, the resources here, the collaboration, the educational aspect. There's a lot to learn from each other, and I think anyone who is wanting to be successful in this industry, whether you're going big or staying independent, is a willingness to learn and a willingness to collaborate and learn from each other. Coming from a film school environment, I will say like the biggest turn off of collaborating with anybody is if they approach you with a real know-it-all attitude or like, oh, I know more than you. Like that's the worst thing that you could possibly do to someone who's wanting to work with you. And so I've noticed that I haven't really encountered that here of people that are turning you down or being rude about it. Everyone is really willing to elevate each other, which has been the most inspiring thing.
And also, we're at a time in history where you don't necessarily have to go to the next big city to quote break in. You
Right.
can make a film locally, which will eventually take you to the next step, but there's no need to jump on the bus, head to LA, go to New York, go to San Francisco or Chicago and try and make it. You can still stay locally and still make quality films.
Absolutely. And I think one thing we really try to emphasize here is that, each project, we're all giving it our all, but it's also all to service learning for the next one. And there's been a lot of building, just seeing these people work together and seeing everybody push each other too. Like every year the projects get better, and it's, I think first and foremost, the people here understand that, first and foremost, it's an art form. And as any community of artists is gonna like, come around this, the community of artists is going to celebrate that art form and try to make it possible. Just that, there's a lot of community support in like theater, for example. There's a lot of like community theaters. And in fact, we've kind of seen some of the local film culture start to mimic that. There's been a lot of pop-up showings. People make a short film, they show it at a local venue, they get a bunch of people to come out. And it's not, saying that that's the way to get, success per se, but people are putting themselves out there, which is cool in and of itself. That we have not only the artists here that are willing to make this material for us to see, but also that there's an audience that actually wants to see it locally too.
That's one thing I noticed when we moved back is that people were not only wanting to be a part of either the film culture here or I think the arts culture, but people were also wanting to experience it, not just be a part of it, but they want to watch the films, go to the art shows, go to the theater. They want to be a part of it. And I think that's a really crucial thing, because as artists, we want people to see our stuff. And it right. seems like almost every time we turn on the news or open a paper or get out our phone, it's nobody wants to be a part of anything. Everyone's doing their own thing. But not here on the Central Coast. It is a wildly different vibe. People genuinely want to be a part of something. And I think that's so important.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I kind of want to circle back on something you just said, but the people here working together, we want to serve as sort of a model for, you know, what we see as good, not just like arts culture, but like film culture, like even the way that a lot of the sets are run around here. You know, these aren't union shoots. They aren't, you know, official in any regard like that. And yet there's a great deal of respect for everybody's time involved. And, you know, we do try to, you know, whenever there is money involved, we try to make sure people get paid. We try to make sure that, you know, we all kind of share in the spoils in that way and scratch each other's backs. But it's mostly to keep the culture alive, you know, since being able to support each other and say, I have a short film I want to make. I'm not entirely sure I have the resources to pull it off. And knowing you have a handful of people, you know, you could call on to, you know, make something happen. I think it's been really cool, and really cool seeing everybody's eyes open to the possibilities, which kind of leads into the mission of what Central Coast Film Society is about.
Good. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Central Coast Film Society, and for anyone listening that isn't aware, is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We're located basically our jurisdiction goes down to like Santa Barbara, and as far north right now, like Cambria, but a little further. We're trying to expand our reach. But basically what we try to do for specifically SLO County and kind of the outlying cities is provide resources, education, networking opportunities, and hopefully in the future, more like concrete, tangible, like physical resources like gear and, you know, grant stuff like that. What we're trying to do is build up the film community here in the Central Coast by kind of boosting this network of filmmakers and increasing the awareness of who's working. And so what we've been doing this year specifically has been building our community and finding our people. So connecting at mixers, hosting events, and what we're trying to do is build a solid base of working filmmakers, artists. It doesn't have to be someone who is, you know, a director or a screenwriter. You could be an art department. You could be a conceptual artist. You could be a graphic designer, a musician. As long as you're interested in collaborating with like-minded creatives, the Film Society is going to, you know, really support you. And so overall, our mission has been to just be that kind of connecting resource and the support organization for those that need it.
And what are some upcoming events that you guys are holding?
Well, first off, we have our big main cornerstone event of the year, the Central Coast Film Society's Central Coast Entertainment Expo. This is in November 16th, and it's at the SLO Film Center, Palm Theater in downtown SLO. From 10 to 2. There's stuff that's going to be happening beyond that window, but that's the window that we're actually at the film center. There should be a film screening tied in to the evening slot as well. We have some official info coming out about that, but we haven't officially announced yet. But we are hoping to land a special guest to come and speak at that event. This event is supposed to represent sort of the culmination of what we represent as an organization, a spot where filmmakers locally can get together, and not only network and connect and also discover resources, but maybe also connect with working professionals, learn new things, improve their craft, and figure out ways that they can achieve their goals on a DIY budget. The Entertainment Expo is put on, you know, with support from sponsors and donations, as well as a special fundraiser screening that we do to help put on this event, the screening event is in October, and I'll let Carlos talk about that.
Yeah, so on October 20th is our major fall fundraiser. So what we've been doing for a couple years now is doing some fundraiser events towards the end of summer, beginning of fall. And what we did last year was a screening of Shaun of the Dead at the Bay Theater. And that was a lot of fun. We had a lot of people come out to help support. But what we're doing this year is sticking within that kind of Halloween theme. But what we're doing is hosting a 40th anniversary celebration screening of the film Reanimator. And you might be wondering why Reanimator doesn't really have a tie to the Central Coast. Well, surprisingly, it does, because a Los Osos resident by the name of Abe Perlstein, who has been around the Central Coast for a long time, he's involved with the Morro Bay Community Rock Radio, and he's been deeply involved with the film community here. You can always see him at the Palm Theater or checking out a new movie. He's just a wonderful person who. He was the on-set photographer for the film when they produced it back in 1984. And so what we've done is connected with him, and we're going to be showcasing quite a few of those photos that he took on set in a special behind-the-scenes showcase. And it's going to be a blast. You're going to see some really crazy behind-the-scenes looks at the makeup, the special effects, to some fun moments with the cast and crew. But also just some just really incredible perspectives of what it was like to be on set at that time. It'll all be narrated by Abe himself. And it's just going to be a really cool way to showcase the filmmaking magic behind such an iconic film. And what's going to be also fun is that is the first time that anybody really in the world besides Abe and a few crew members will have seen these photos.
I think that's so neat. For people who've never seen Reanimator, it's Barbara Crampton, Jeffrey Combs, at their finest, I may say.
Absolutely.
And to have those photos there and have Abe talk about them, and because that's such a different time for filmmaking and a different time for horror filmmaking. So I think what you guys are doing, especially with Reanimator and the upcoming expo in November, it's the chef's kiss to what we need here on the Central Coast.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. The Central Coast Film Society has been around since 2018 and was originally founded by Daniel Lair, who is a Central Coast resident. He currently doesn't live in the area anymore, but he's still involved, still on our board, as well as a couple other original members. I personally joined in 2019, right after I graduated from film school, and came back to Central Coast, discovered this organization, and really resonated with the mission that they were going for. And I tell this story a lot, but it was really meaningful to me. The first event I ever went to for Film Society, they had a special guest who was speaking, and he gave a bit of advice that sort of motivated my involvement in joining the organization. And that was everybody in film school and such, they think that they're going to get their big break from somebody above them, from somebody who's made it, somebody who's established, who's working in the industry, that they're going to give somebody below them their big break. And the reality is that, most of the time it's actually your peers and your colleagues and the people you come up with that are going to help you get your first big break or first step. Because it's all about the people at your level helping each other out get to that next step. They're going to be your most accessible. They're going to be your most supportive because they're in the same place that you are. And the more you can work together, then the stronger you are as a filmmaking unit. So that really resonated with me and inspired me to join. And ever since then, during the COVID years, 2021, 22, it was a little rough as far as figuring out what we actually meant as an actual, like, in the community organization. We did some film history showcases, we did some film showings, and then we started the expo in 2022 as a way to sort of like bring people together and maybe make it like some way where we could connect to the community more. And as this has evolved, we've just found this really unique position in the community of being a possible resource hub as well as a way for the different film organizations here to connect and communicate with each other. Even recently, we were able to help the production for F1 came and shot in the area at the Dunes, and they were looking for some PAs to come help. And we were able to connect with them and get some Cal Poly students, Cuesta students, Allen Hancock students on that set. And then, you know, there they are, their names are in the credits as it's playing on all the theaters here in the Central Coast. It was really cool. Like the fact that we were able to make that happen, it's just like, you know, an initial step, but those are the kinds of moves we want to be making.
And how can people get involved and follow you?
Everyone, if you're interested, can follow us on both Instagram and Facebook. You'll just find us, Central Coast Film Society. Be sure to check out our website. We're updating that constantly with new event information, as well as the ability to sign up for our newsletter is on there. You can contact us and be put on the newsletter, which that goes out monthly, as well as with anything coming up. We do crew calls. On set notifications. So if there's a filmmaker that needs some help, we put out some calls. So you can stay informed on what we're doing. And we're really trying to push these events coming up, specifically the fundraiser and the expo, because we want them to not only be successful, but we want more people to, you know, be able to kind of immerse themselves and enjoy what we have to offer as an organization. And with the fundraiser specifically, to, you know, kind of help support the ongoing mission, which as a whole we've already talked about, but some programs that you'd be helping to fund would be not only the Entertainment Expo, but the student scholarship competition, which happens every May, and that goes to some high school students that submit their films, and we give them a little cash to help maybe fulfill their filmmaking dream going into college or over that summer. It's an incredible program that we've seen the quality just skyrocket over the past few years, and the students have a blast. And this was the first year that we've been able to not only triple the amount that we were donating to students, but we were also able to give them equipment as scholarships due to a generous donation from some local production companies. So the fundraiser really helps bring those programs to life so we can continue keeping that dream alive and maintaining that part of our mission.
Also, one note about the expo is I don't think we have the registration live yet, but if you follow us and stay tuned, if you pre-register for the expo, its admission is free. If you come day of, there will be an at-the-door ticket price. But if you pre-register, it's free. This, of course, is even made more possible if the fundraiser goes well. So please come to the fundraiser so that you can get your free ticket.
Yes, go watch Reanimator in the theater at the Bay. I was just talking to somebody about this earlier today, but the Bay is my new favorite theater. I love the Palm, don't get me wrong, but the Bay is where it's at right now. So seeing Reanimator there, come on out, October 20th, right?
October 20th, it will start. If you buy the VIP admission, you get in at 4:30 and get a free beer or wine, as well as a couple raffle tickets. If you get the general admission, that allows you in at 5 o'clock. You get a chance to peruse some merch, and you can buy a beer or wine. And the film will start at 5:30.
That's fantastic. Be sure to follow Central Coast Film Society on both Facebook and Instagram. Be a part of it. Reach out, get their newsletter. This is something to be a part of. And then go see them and go watch Reanimator and then check out the expo in November. Kyle and Carlos, I appreciate your time. Thank you for joining me on Issues and Ideas today.
Thank you
Thanks
so
so
much.
much.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Story. This is Dr. Consuelo Mukes, and I'm so glad to have you here today as I speak with some wonderful people helping us out in the library area of our county. With us today, we have the Slo Library Foundation, and the president of the foundation is Julian McAdam. And we also have the County Library Director, Christopher Barnacle, with us to talk about what's going on with the libraries throughout our county. So welcome to the Nonprofit Story, Julian.
Thank you.
And Christopher.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. So let's get started, first of all, with just doing a basic introduction here. Christopher, you are with the county and helping us with our libraries. And Julian, you are with the foundation. It seems like you're working, coordinating with each other to make sure that we have a strong library system throughout the county. So tell us what that's about, Julian.
Well, fine, I'll go ahead. The Slo Library Foundation, we support the entire county system. It's different from the friends groups, which support their individual libraries, but the foundation offers financial and advocacy support for the entire county system. The foundation's been around for a number of years, but a lot of people haven't heard of us. The foundation is basically just a board of directors. We don't have a staff. We don't have an office. We have a website. Mm-hmm. Would you like to hear the website? Sure.
Sure, go ahead.
slowlibraryfoundation.org. Mm-hmm. And you can find out all about us there, what we do and how much money we manage. We manage a substantial amount of money from bequests. And when the library asks us for money to help with collection development, for example, or with the summer reading program, we write the library a check.
That sounds wonderful. And we'll talk about that a little bit more and how people can maybe donate and support that fund. But Christopher, let me talk to you and say, tell us about being the library director for the county. What is your role in this?
Sure. So I've been here since 2013, and we have 14 branches throughout the county. So if you're working your way up the coast, if you start in Oceano, Napomo, and work your way north as far as Cambria, and then if you start going inland, you're as far north as San Miguel and out to Shandon, and then we come back around. So we have three regional locations. That's Arroyo Grande, San Luis Obispo, and Atascadero. And then we have four more like community-sized branches. That'd be more like Los Osos, Morro Bay, Cambria, and Napomo. And then we have seven other express branches. And so those are operated by one individual, and they're in small communities like Creston, as an example, where they're really community hubs for the residents of those communities to connect and get resources that they are interested in.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So the two of you work in harmony, it seems, in order to do what for the library? That's something that we don't really understand, I think. What are you doing together here?
So we have all kinds of resources and services that we provide throughout the county, and we have limited budget, limited capacity, and so we call upon the foundation when we have gaps in our budget, as an example. And so one of the programs that is extremely popular annually is our summer reading program, and the Library Foundation has underwritten the entire program for us for years now. And the benefit is to local community members who get to go out to the various branches, participate in different programs that we host, as well as have access to resources that they may not have, you know, without the funding from the foundation.
Mm-hmm. So, Julian, what about you? How are you actually working in the community as the foundation?
Well, for one thing, we are trying to develop stronger relationships with those various friends groups, because those friends groups support their community libraries, and we go out and work with them and talk with them about what they can do to support the entire county system and how we can help them as well. Mm-hmm. We also try to spread the word about what all is available at the library, because a lot of people think libraries are just books, and there is so much more mm-hmm. that's available at the library. So we're just trying to spread the word and say, hey, use that library card. You can save a lot of money.
Why don't we talk a little bit about some of those other services? Because I think books is what we really do focus on. What else do we have available?
Yeah, the conventional wisdom would hold that you go to the library. It's a very quiet place that you go and browse the stacks to find whatever title you'd like to bring home with you. And we certainly do that, but libraries are so much more. We have story times where parents come in with their kids and they can be read to and participate in various programs. We have non-traditional collections, such as maybe you want an analog night. It's your home, and you're tired of looking at screens, and so you can come into the library and check out a board game and have a family fun night. You can, let's say you're getting ready to redo your kitchen and you need that backsplash put in and you just don't have the tools available, and so you can come to the library and check out a tile saw. So it really runs a gamut of really your imagination as far as what resources can be provided to you in your library.
At the Shandon Library, there's actually a tool lending library that has just all kinds of tools you could possibly imagine, and you can just check out a tool. Hmm. The librarian says one of the most popular is Weed Whacker.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense around here. You know, before we go farther, I just want to have you tell the people what it would take for them to become a member of the library, or can you just walk in and get a book or get some things? Because I don't think we always know.
You're welcome to come in at any time, of course. We just ask that you have a valid ID showing a local address, And with that, you get full access to the library and all its services for free. As an example, one of our partners is the SLO Makerspace. And so with your library card, you can present that at the Makerspace and you can use their wood shop, or you can come in and throw clay on a wheel, or if there's something that you want to create a costume now that Halloween is coming up, you can use their sewing machines and they can really help you with all your maker needs.
If you have old family photos or VHS tapes, there's a lab where you can digitize them. Also, we have memory kits, which are available for perhaps families who have a member who is suffering from dementia. And the memory kits help them find ways to talk with their family member, to connect with them.
So these are important things that people in our community need. I wonder if people always know how to access it. It sounds easy. Just walk in, get a card, and there you are. Are there any other things that steps or any ways that people can find out more?
Well, for one, they can ask their local librarian, because librarians are awesome people. Librarians know everything.
That's true, they do.
So they go to the library and they say, hey, how can I do this? And they'll find out.
Good, good. Christopher, as the person that's helping us from the county, what do you see as certain needs for the libraries within the county?
The future of libraries is really a reflection upon the community and what it is that they want. So our budget is always focused on the needs of the community and making sure that we're meeting the community where it is that they are. For example, recently we brought in a social worker who works full-time, primarily out of our San Luis Obispo branch, and that individual helps those who are looking for referral services. Could be anything from needing help to find housing or just looking for someone to speak to about, you know, whatever issues are ailing them at this time.
So how could somebody get in touch with this particular person if needed?
So in this particular case, they could go to the San Luis Obispo branch and ask, as Julianne stated, any one of our librarians, and they would be referred to our social worker.
Okay. So there's a lot of help that's out there for the community that sometimes we're not clear about.
Yes.
That we can hear. How is the foundation different, let's say, than maybe the board of directors for the library or any other volunteers for the library?
Well, the library doesn't have a board of directors. The library has staff.
Okay.
So the various librarians, the various regional branch managers, all of that. The library director reports to the county board of supervisors. That's sort of the board of directors. The foundation is just the board. The board runs the foundation. We have a 10-member board now, 10 or 11. I think we just got a new one. Fortunately, we have some younger people on our board now, and they have lots of great ideas. So it's the foundation. Just we meet once a month with the library staff, with the administrative staff, to find out what's going on with the library and how we can help.
I'm hearing that the library in our counties are a place of inclusion. That's what I'm kind of getting from what
Absolutely.
You're saying, right?
The library is one place that you can go where you're What did I read recently? You're a citizen, not a customer. The library is free. Anybody can walk into the library. And if you have a library card, you can access all those services. And it's definitely a community-focused place, a place that, that doesn't turn people away.
You know, what are some of the new things that are at the library now? I know I think about it as shelves with just books in it that you can read. And I know there's the research area and those types of areas, but it seems like they're so updated now. What can people find?
I think what you find in most libraries now, people are looking for a place in which to gather. And so a lot of our newer renovations, we look for spaces that people can meet, whether they're looking for homework help. We've got an amazing program in our literacy. It's called the Literacy Connection, where we pair tutors and learners together one-on-one, and they set goals for whatever their literacy needs are. And so you could use our meeting rooms to host teleconferencing for your particular business, or, you know, whatever it is. Again, it's just a reflection of the community and the residents of this county and their needs. So
they also have various groups. For example, I live in Los Osos. The Los Osos branch every 3 months has poetry night, and they invite a couple of published poets to share their work, and then it's open mic. And so there's always a huge number of local poets who go out and read their poems. There's teen nights, there's readers' theater, there's book groups, there's watching TED Talks and then discussing them. I mean, there's so each individual community, each branch will have lots of programs for those kids. There's Lego groups. It's amazing.
That sounds wonderful. And if you're just joining us, this is The Nonprofit Story. I'm your host, Dr. Consuelo Mukes. And with me today, I have Julia McAdams. She is the president of the foundation board here in Slo County. And I also have with us Christopher Barnicle, who is with the county, who is the county library director. And we're speaking about some of the things of the library system here that are just amazing. And a lot of us really don't know all of that's going on. Another thing that you had mentioned earlier is that the library has something called the Library by Mail Services. What is that one about?
Yeah, so that's super important to highlight here that the services that we provide aren't only in the 14 branches, but we do outreach into various communities. And then for those who are homebound and can't get access to the library, and for whatever reason, maybe they don't want to use digital content, they can get access to our print that will be sent to them, and then we provide postage to get that sent back to us. And so it's a program that allows, again, access within the home, and we really try to reach everyone wherever they are within the county.
The library also has three mobile libraries.
So we have mobile outreach vans that we bring to various locations in the county and provide services. It could be in early learning centers or senior care facilities.
Farmers markets.
Oh, farmers my. Markets, again, where the people of this county go, you will find the library.
That's fantastic, and it takes money, I think, to run the library. Sometimes, is that right?
Absolutely.
I would say always,
always?
Not just sometimes.
Yes. So, with the foundation, it seems that you might be responsible in some ways to kind of help get some of those funds in, and that recently you may have had a wonderful donation to the library system. But tell us about that. Tell us how you are helping us stay open.
Well, the foundation manages, we have a wealth advisor. We manage two large bequests. We were very fortunate to have people leave us large amounts of money in their wills. So we manage that money and then use that to give the library money. Most recently, we gave the library a check for $300,000.
Wonderful.
For collection development to help, as Christopher said, to fill that gap between county funding and what the library actually needs.
How are we doing as a library system?
I think we're doing well. I mean, we have great support from our Board of Supervisors. The community is very passionate about their libraries. Our budget this year is about $13.8 million. As Julianne noted, we had about $1 million collection development and programming budget last year. And because of budget constraints this year, we fell short. So we had to go to our foundation and ask for support. We get support from our friends groups, and they just shore up the financial gaps, again, to provide those direct services to the community where it is and with the resources that they like.
We've also partnered with the library to have some events lately. For example, in August, there was a back-to-school extravaganza to mark the end of the summer reading program. There were like 800 people came out, all families, lots of children. There were games, there were activities, there was a ballet performance. It was an absolutely wonderful event. And then most recently, Chris organized a film screening that was very well received. And we hope to do more of that, more outreach activities for specific age groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the library, we believe stories matter. And we feel like we're the conduit for people to gather and share stories and share experiences and learn from them. And so, as Julianne was stating, we hosted a producer-director who has a very provocative film title called Black People Don't. And we had a panel from Race Matters, NAACP.
The Morro Coast Audubon Society.
Yes.
The county.
Behavioral health.
Yeah, behavioral health.
And so the film director, as a black man, was participating in non-traditional sports and really felt like he needed to be able to do things that were reflective upon what he wanted to do, not what other people felt like he should be doing, given his race and culture. And so it was a brilliant conversation on identity and mental health and filmmaking, that creative content making. And so these are the kind of
It was
programs.
Also a little bit scary because he was going over a waterfall in a kayak with a GoPro camera. So you were doing it with him.
This is true.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Wow. So you can actually be in the excitement there.
Yes.
You know, it just sounds like the library, you're making it so it's for everyone here.
It really is.
There's a way for all to get involved. What about your library by mail program?
So our library by mail program is set up for those who can't get into the library. And if they don't want digital content, then we will provide them access in their homes with the print materials and allow them to get those materials back to the library without having to leave their home.
And they can also get audiobooks.
And how do you get this to them? You take it to them yourselves?
No, it gets mailed.
We send it out to them, yes, by mail. We have an outreach coordinator, and so she helps run that throughout the county, and she will connect with you over the phone or by email and get you registered for the program. And then you can go to our website at www.slowlibrary.org, and you can go on our catalog and find whatever materials you'd like.
And if you can't access the catalog, she'll just sort of talk to you and say, well, what kinds of things do you like to read? And then she'll sort of curate something for you.
Wonderful. Now, so how does the library actually impact anyone? Do you have any stories or anything that you've seen over this year of how the library has actually impacted lives?
I actually have one, a good one about library by mail, because I deliver meals to homebound seniors in Los Osos. Mm-hmm. And I had a client who loved library by mail. She mostly got audiobooks. She loved it. Mm-hmm. The only way that I found out that she had passed at 103 was that she still had materials out from the library, and the coordinator of the program contacted me to say, hey, Corinne is gone. It was absolutely lovely.
Mm-hmm. So you'd have become a community, a broader community,
yes,
without leaving anyone alone in their home
absolutely
by themselves. Mm-hmm. Christopher, what do you see as the future of the libraries in our county?
Again, I'd say it's a reflection upon the community and their needs. We certainly will continue collecting print materials. There's so much to be said about being able to turn a page rather than looking at a screen. We're agnostic, though. You know, whatever you choose to get your information, we're happy to provide it. And so you can stream movies. You can use our resources with platforms like Libby to get digital content. And those could be an ebook that you're reading on your Kindle device, or it could be something that you're streaming over your phone as you're sitting in traffic. And so it's the library of things that we spoke of. It could be just something that you need, a one-time deal. It could be something that gives you kind of a try before you buy, like the induction stovetops that we offer for people to take home with them. And I can say that I had an individual who was remodeling their kitchen, and they still needed to provide food on their table. And so by taking a induction stovetop home, they were able to continue to dine in rather than having to go out every evening.
That's amazing. I don't think you would think about having an induction system at the library that you could take out. And that's amazing. So there's a lot of things that people can find out about their library that we probably don't know.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So do you ever allow people to make donations to help out with the library?
Oh, we not only allow it, we encourage it.
Okay. Tell us about that.
The foundation accepts donations via the website. Our website is slowlibraryfoundation.org. There's a donate button. We also, you can get library merchandise. They have a lot of t-shirts with really great designs. And if you go to, Bonfire, it's called Bonfire, it's an organization, but there's a link to it on the Library Foundation's webpage. And you can get tote bags or long sleeve t-shirts, short sleeve t-shirts, onesies for babies. And the Library Foundation gets a percentage of those profits. So there's lots of ways to donate. We also encourage people to think about leaving the Library Foundation in your will because, as I said, that's the main source of our funds right now is very generous bequests.
Okay, that's wonderful. And Christopher, anything else on that you want to add?
No, we just encourage people to come into the library. If you haven't done so lately, we have 14 branches throughout the community. Go out on our website, browse what it is that you might find of interest, and I almost guarantee you we have it.
And sign up for the newsletter. The library has a great newsletter.
Wonderful. And that's the slowlibraryfoundation.org. Is that correct?
That's my website.
And you can go to slowlibrary.org if you would like to look at our catalog or any of our programs or resources that are of interest to you.
That's wonderful. I'd like to thank you for being with us today on The Nonprofit Story. I've been speaking with Julian McAdams. She is the president of the Foundation of the Library. And I also was speaking with Christopher, and he is the County Library Director. But thank you for being with us. So much to do and so much to see in the library. This is The Nonprofit Story. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Michelle Haddad. I am the Adult Literacy Coordinator for SLO County Libraries, and our program is called The Literacy Connection.
Michelle, thank you so much for joining us here on Issues and Ideas. Can you tell me a little bit about The Literacy Connection?
The Literacy Connection is a relatively new program. It's a new literacy program brought in through the county libraries. We offer free one-on-one adult literacy ESL services and family literacy services. And our mission is really to empower individuals to live independently as members of the community, to feel confident and to have a little bit of humanity brought back to them as they're navigating challenges in their lives, whether it's an inability to read and write, to speak the language, to want to become a citizen or pass the driver's exam, so we help them achieve any of their learning goals.
And when was it founded?
It's a new program. So we're in our second year. We started in September of 2023. I was brought on to kind of start up this program from scratch. We had zero learners, zero volunteers, and I took a few months to build up the foundation to kind of figure out how we want to run this program. And in our first year, we served 76 adult learners. And had 51 volunteers. Now in our second year, we had a huge amount of growth. We served 184 adult learners and had 81 volunteers, and hoping to continue that route as we move forward in the future. So it's very exciting.
And what was the impetus for starting the Literacy Connection?
Before the libraries had an in-house literacy program, they outsourced to a third-party vendor. And it was a good program, but they never really had the clear, direct communication or transparency or real involvement or connection between libraries and literacy that they really wanted to start. So for that reason, and to kind of reach across the county and not just in specifically San Luis Obispo, they decided to bring the program in-house. We've got 14 branches countywide. And they thought that if we bring a program in-house, we can reach and access communities that are far more in need. We definitely saw that there was a greater need countywide. And as a result, I think that has really paid off, because we have now learners from Napomo, so many learners in South County, and we're gradually moving up to North County. Cambria, we're starting a wonderful new program up there. So as we're making our way through our counties, slowly but surely reaching these communities that really could use our help.
And who are people reaching out to you guys, or are you reaching out to communities, or is it a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both. A lot of my work is outreach and, you know, really just speaking to anybody who will listen about our program and getting the word out there that we're here and we exist and the services that we offer. And as a result, I've had some beautiful community partnerships come of that. And then beyond that is really just the word of mouth. We get a learner, they have a friend, they have a cousin, and it just kind of snowballs from there. We've also done a lot of work in creating programs. We do work with the county jail and have been able to provide some services there. We have a basic ESL service and a storytelling workshop at the county jail, where, again, it's a beautiful partnership where we're able to acquire some learners there. And, you know, anywhere, any community, any organization that I feel like is a good match, I'll happily go talk and present, and we kind of figure out what are your needs, how can we help meet them, and we kind of make it work together.
I find that very interesting. Can you tell me a little bit more about the outreach in the jail system? Like, how is that? How does that work?
Yeah, the outreach in the jail, that was actually one of my first things that came aboard and came about. I had a really wonderful partner there. She's since retired. She was the program manager at the jail and was really, really interested in creating programs for the inmates there because they were really lacking as far as resources went. And we met and had a really wonderful partnership. And as a result of that relationship, we found volunteers who were interested in going into the jail. The recruiting for a volunteer to get into the jail was a little bit more difficult, but I found two wonderful gentlemen that were just incredible. I call them my unicorns because they were just so perfect for this role. So Hector, he's our volunteer that does ESL tutoring at the county jail. And really his focus is helping those individuals that have really limited English and that are just trying to survive, get their basic needs communicated, being able to ask for help when they need it, to report an issue, really just kind of surviving in this environment. And he's kind of been a lifeline for a lot of them to be able to do that, which is a really beautiful program. And then Stephen, he's our volunteer who does a storytelling workshop. And this workshop kind of just came as a way for our learners at the county jail to express their feelings, put them down on paper, to work their emotions out through storytelling. And he serves as kind of a guide and narrates and helps express their feelings on paper, helps put them on paper. So that has, we've seen some really beautiful stories come out of that program as well.
I'm kind of stuck on this jail thing because I think it's so cool, because if we want to make a better society, we make a smarter society, yeah. You know? Have you seen any of the impacts from the jail system for either teaching people to read and speak English or the storytelling aspect?
I have. You know, we've received some really beautiful letters from inmates at the jail saying how special this program is for them and how it gives them hope and that makes their daily lives a little bit easier knowing that there are people that care, that people that want to help them. So that has been really moving just to kind of see that impact directly made. And I get reports back from all of our tutors about the progress that their learners are making. And just to kind of hear about, especially for our ESL learners there, to be able to communicate the basic needs and to kind of have that relief of being able to just say the simplest things to the guards, because many of them don't speak Spanish. So seeing that has been very impactful, just to make a little bit, somebody's life a little bit easier, even though they are in jail and in this, you know, awful situation, to kind of help ease their struggles a little bit. Makes this all worthwhile, this program.
Yeah, not only ease their struggles while they're on the inside, but hopefully translating that to when they're out, that it's not just a repeat story of where they're going to get back into trouble, back into jail, back into the system, but they're using the things that you're teaching them to better themselves, in which better society.
And the library as a whole, not just our program, has a huge role to play in doing exactly that. We offer inmates upon release to come into the branch. If once they sign up with a library card, they can get a free bus pass. We really want to encourage the continuation of integration into our community by showing them acceptance, that we welcome them, that there is a second chance available to you. And we want to make sure that the library that they know is a home for them to take that second chance.
And how do you find your tutors?
I really just talk to anybody who listens. We have a wonderful newsletter that our team puts out, and we get a lot of interested folks. Here in San Luis Obispo County, we have been very, very blessed with folks that really just want to help. And we have so many people that have the time, thankfully, that they can commit to a learner, whether if they're retired or they're college students or their moms whose kids are at school and they want to be able to be active in the community. So we have been very lucky in receiving volunteers. Of course, we can always use more. We are fully volunteer-based, and we would not be able to do what we do without our volunteers. And I really love the fact that people are just stepping up and showing that they can help and they can care and are changing people's lives, their own included. Many of the times the relationship that's built between the learner and the volunteer is life-changing for the volunteer. So it's a really beautiful symbiotic relationship that kind of happens there.
I love that because it's something I've said for a long time, but when you're doing good things, it's a selfish act.
It can be, yes.
Because it does make you feel good to do good things, and that's not a bad thing. Be selfish and do good.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way about my role here. This has been the most fulfilling job I've ever had in my life, and I love it so much. I love this program dearly, and I really, it's because of that reason. I feel so fulfilled that I'm like helping somebody in the tiniest way possible, and I know our volunteers feel exactly the same way.
Well, it's such an important message, I think, especially in today's culture where it's a very me, me, me centered. It's like, I got to get this thing for me now. I got to get my phone out and order this now. I want that dopamine hit now, now.
And I genuinely think that people care in this community. They care about their neighbors. They care about what's happening. They want to improve the lives of their neighbors and really help where they can. I've seen that firsthand in so many people that are willing to do anything. And I appreciate that because a program like ours that's fully volunteer-based is really in need of folks like that. And I know statewide, we're paid for by a grant from the California State Library. And not every community is as lucky as we are to have volunteers step up and be willing to do anything. Many of them are struggling to find volunteers where I feel here a little guilty. Like, we have a good amount. We, of course, need more. We, of course, welcome more. The more volunteers we have, the more learners we can serve. But we're in a very good position where not too many folks are waiting too long to get paired up.
You also tutor students. Can you tell me about how you're tutoring and or finding students?
Our main focus is one-on-one tutoring. So we pair one learner with one tutor. And in some circumstances, we do small groups, so 2 or 3 to 1 tutor. Beyond that, we also have classes that we offer. So if there are several folks that are looking for the same goal, whether it's citizenship or just English conversation, right, we try to create programs and needs for those learners. So we do one-on-one, small group, and class kind of things. We have this incredible program, which, again, very near and dear to my heart. It's migrant education. So for our migrant population down in South County, we have created classes that are threefold. The first one is basic Spanish literacy. Many of these folks don't even know how to read and write in Spanish, so we help them with that. The second is basic English, and then the third is family literacy. So while the parents are learning, they can bring their children and not have to worry about childcare. We provide dinner. We kind of do fun learning activities with their kids to make sure that they're safe and taken care of so the parents can kind of focus on their learning, which is a really wonderful program.
Although this is a new program, do you plan to see a lot of generational impact?
This is intended to have a greater impact. You change one person's life, and that changes the life of their family, whether it's being able to get a job, being able to speak directly to their children's teachers, becoming a citizen. That has generational impact, and that is exactly what we're hoping to achieve here.
I think that's so inspiring because it takes a lot of guts to reach out to somebody and say, I need help. Especially when it's something as basic as reading and writing. And it's something that I know I take for granted. I know most people will take for granted because we all had the proper steps to learn to read and write. So it takes a lot of guts to come to you guys and say, I need help. Or it also takes a lot of heart and guts to say, I want to help.
Gosh, yeah. I think our learners are some of the bravest people I've ever met because exactly for that reason, to come from a place of vulnerability, to say, I need help. I don't know how to navigate this on my own. I've tried for so long. I've struggled. Please help me. And we take for granted the simple things, right? But it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of strength. But what drives them is the hope that they have, the hope for change, the hope for a better life, the hope that things can get easier. And it's our pleasure to be able to kind of help them navigate that.
Don't feel intimidated. Reach out if you want to become a tutor. Reach out if you're having issues. There is help out there. There is help available. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me on Issues and Ideas today.
Thank you, David.
You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. Our theme music comes from Gary Eister, and a big thank you to all of our guests and contributors. I'm David McAbee. Join me every Monday from 1 to 2 for more stories, more voices, and more of what makes our community tick. And if you miss something or just want to hear it again, you'll find every conversation waiting for you at kcbx.org. And remember, the best stories are right here at home. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week. This is KCBX.